This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. An evil high school girl gives a heart-wrenching eulogy after both her parents are shot dead tonight. She is suspect number one. Good evening. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
Sarah's five-year-old sister finds their parents, Kristen and James Brock, in their bedroom, violently shot to death. Police discover no sign of forced entry.
What happened to two very loving parents? A little five-year-old sister finds her parents shot dead? Listen.
On the morning of February 20th, 2025, deputies with the Carroll County Sheriff's Office responded to a tragic scene at 1531 Carrollton Tyus Road. They discovered the bodies of James Brock, 45, and Kristen Brock, 41, both deceased from apparent gunshot wounds. Our prayers remain with the families of James and Kristen Brock, and especially with their young daughter who was home during this horrific crime. We also want to extend our heartfelt thanks to the community that has rallied for justice and has never given up hope.
I'm glad that everybody is praying for the allegedly evil high school girl, but it doesn't end there. A gut-wrenching, tearful eulogy goes down. You've got to hear this.
For those of you who do not know me, my name is Sarah, and I am Kristen Brock's daughter and James Brock's stepdaughter. This isn't easy, and I don't know how Ben and Angie do this all the time, but I'm really happy I get to do this. They're with me because I stutter a lot. I just wanted to say goodbye to my mom and Jamie since we never got the chance to. I was so used to you guys always being here to me that I never once thought to imagine y'all not being here. I didn't have a single clue how much I needed y'all until now.
That's from Kristen Dowda's Facebook. I'm sorry. I was distracted because I'm trying to count how many times she said, me. I, me. During a eulogy for her parents, and I heard a lot of, but I didn't see any actual tears and definitely no snot. With me, an all-star panel to make sense of what we know right now. But before I go to Katie Forrester, Exclusives editor, U.S. Sun, investigative reporter, let me first start with Dr. William Maroney, renowned medical examiner, toxicologist, pathologist, opioid treatment expert, author of American Narcan, and so much more. Dr. Maroney, why did she say apparent gunshot wounds? When people are shot multiple times, you know it. You walk into a room, I've done it, gone into a crime scene, and somebody's head is basically blown off, or they're shot and their chest is wide open, or their intestines are hanging out. I mean, you know, you don't have to be a medical examiner like you or a toxicologist or a pathologist to know somebody's been shot.
The adjective or the adverb that you would use, apparent, is completely inappropriate. It doesn't address scientific frankness and truth, period.
Okay, you know what? I could have gotten any guy on the street to say it's not true. Okay, could you, you're the medical examiner. I was expecting something medically.
Okay, medically, we have blunt force injuries, we have sharp force injuries, and we have gunshot wounds that we consider contact or not contact. And the only time we ever use the word apparent is if somebody is burnt to a crisp and you can't figure out whether the hole is a hole from a bullet or a hole from other trauma. When we have gunshot wounds, the first thing we do is we look closely at the clothes and closely at the skin. And if there's char that goes around the wound, that means that the gun was contact on the skin. That is never an accident. It's premeditated and it's homicide. After that, you may have some blowback on clothes, but contact gunshot wounds are really important because they show intent and motive. What we see people add adjectives and add adverbs to distract. And we want to use candor. Candor is truth with direction. And we didn't get truth with direction.
Okay, now that is much more than I get off a guy on the street. Bottom line, Maroney, isn't it true that when a victim like these two, a mom and dad, are shot in their own room multiple times, even a lawyer like me, a trial lawyer, can walk in and see they were shot. It doesn't take a PhD and a specialty in toxicology and pathology to figure that out. It's very clear. What do you know about the wounds to these two victims? A very loving mom and dad. As a matter of fact, I'm going to ask Katie about this. The dad was waiting on a heart transplant, and he was still cutting the grass or vacuuming at the local church. Very, very loving to the alleged evil high school girl stepdaughter. So, Dr. Maroney, what can you tell me about their injuries?
I think the multiple gunshots is always telling versus a single gunshot. That it totally relates to some kind of crime of passion. There's a lot of hatred. There's a disruption. This may actually be a sign of mental illness, or I hate to use the term drug addiction.
Dear Lord in heaven, you've been on your opioid bus for way too long. Maroney has a bus, put his money where his mouth is, and he travels to enlighten and help and treat opioid addicts, saving a lot of lives. Okay. Dr. Maroney, correct me if I'm wrong, but aren't you a medical examiner? That's a yes, no, Maroney. A medical examiner, right?
Yes, Maroney. It's a yes,
okay,
Maroney.
Okay, that means you have a medical degree, correct?
That's a yes, Maroney. Yes.
Okay. And you are a toxicologist and a pathologist, correct?
I work with forensic toxicology, and my work is pathology, but I'm not the pathologist. I'm a medical examiner. Same. Close.
Okay. At any point, did you receive your PhD in psychology or psychiatry?
No, but I own a clinic.
So you're trying to tell me right now, by multiple gunshot wounds, the body's literally hanging open, that you can tell me there was a mental illness on the part of the shooter. Out mean girl.
Behavioral problems. The kids today are so messed up between COVID and TikTok and violence and just we mental illness cannot be.
But you just threw COVID in the bag with TikTok.
I did.
Don't think they're similar at all. By the way, I'm putting you on TikTok tonight. Okay, so you're going to be on TikTok, Dr. Maroney. You know what? Let's just get a grip on reality really quickly. First of all, I'm going to go back to Maroney when I need a medical opinion. Katie Forrester is with us, assistant exclusives editor, U.S. Sun. She covers true crime all the time and is intimately versed in this case. Katie Forrester, please enlighten us about the murders themselves. Let me be more specific. The injury sustained by this mom and dad.
They're horrific. I mean, I think you put it right there where you said there's a lot of me in the posts that she'd done since then, the way she'd acted. There's a lot of narcissism there. Obviously, she has pleaded not guilty. And we know the Menendez brothers, you know, we've seen this happen before where someone has murdered their own parents. Usually they cannot help but confide in someone. It seems she didn't. If she do this, her friends and family are supporting her. She's sending text messages, thanking them for their support. There's certainly something mental going on.
Katie Forrester, look at your monitor. I want to see the video again with all the black coming down her face and all the snot. Okay. Yeah, you know what? I didn't see any of that at the funeral. Guys, let's take another tiny listen to Miss Thing giving her parents eulogy. Notice there's no black mascara and eyeliner just streaming down her face. And by the way, that video you just saw is from Kristen Dowd's Facebook. Let's watch.
For James, thank you for all the life lessons you taught me and for being the best, funnest dad ever. Your heart will finally be healed in heaven and neither of y'all will be in any pain anymore. Although that gives me so much comfort, your fight was not supposed to end there.
I've got to analyze her words. By the way, in the first tiny clip I showed you, that's from Kristen Dowd's Facebook. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and I'm not through counting, in just two sentences, three sentences, 11 times I or me. Now we're hearing more. For James, as her stepfather, thank you for all the life lessons you taught me and being the best, funnest 1920 dad ever. Your heart will finally be healed in heaven. Okay, and you will not be in pain anymore. Okay, one more tiny listen.
And for my mother, everything we went through does not define what kind of person or what kind of mother you were. You were a beautiful, kind soul with so much gratitude and so gosh dang strong. And you taught me so many life lessons and some that you just recently taught me within the letter you sent to James in 2018. When I first read it, I smiled and I cried and I got chill bumps. But every single time I read it, it puts me to a lot of peace.
There you see a gut-wrenching eulogy by a daughter left orphan after her mom and stepdad are brutally murdered. That was from Kristen Dowd's Facebook. Katie Forrester, describe to me where mom and stepdad were murdered.
So they were murdered in their home. It was in the middle of the night. And the most disturbing thing about this story, apart from the fact that somebody might murder their own parents, is that the five-year-old daughter of Kristen was the one to discover the bodies. I mean, it's horrific. I can't imagine, you know, whether she would remember this growing up or, you know, whether she's going to have trauma counseling. If Sarah Grace Patrick did do this, the fact that she would let her younger daughter find the bodies is just beyond. They were brutally
murdered. Listen, you're absolutely right, Katie. Take a listen.
My five-year-old niece was then woke up to find their parents lifeless. The trauma this innocent child will carry for the rest of her life is unfathomable.
On the morning of Thursday, February 20th, the five-year-old daughter of Jamie and Kristen Brock goes to her parents' bedroom to wake them up. Not understanding what she sees, the child runs to her older sister, 16-year-old Sarah Grace Patrick, who immediately calls 911. The five-year-old has discovered her mother and father dead in their bed, their bodies riddled with bullets. On the phone with 911, Sarah Grace tells the dispatcher the bodies are cold to the touch, past the need to do CPR.
Fox 5, Atlanta.
Days after the murder, Sarah begins posting tearful TikToks and sends messages to true crime influencers asking them to look into the death of her parents, claiming it would be a really big hit.
Maybe I'm projecting, but when I became a crime victim, I couldn't eat, I couldn't sleep, much less post on TikTok. Joining me right now is a very special guest who we are calling Janice. You may know her as allegedly, reportedly on TikTok. Janice, thank you for being with us. You were approached, we believe, by Sarah Grace Patrick. What happened?
That is correct. On June 3rd, I got a message from Sarah Grace Patrick that just said, search up the Brock case. And the only Brock that came to my mind was Brock Turner. So I asked, what Brock case? And she explained that it was the unsolved murders of her parents, as she put it. I later learned it was her mother and stepfather. On June 3rd, she asked me to shine a light on this case. On June 4th, she offered to email me photos of the victims and her version of events. On June 5th, I did post a video about this unsolved case, And Sarah Grace began commenting on that video.
Tell me about the video that you posted.
I posted a video similar to any video I would post about an unsolved case. I had compassion for this young girl that lost her parents, and I just wanted to do anything I could to spread awareness. So I laid out the facts that there were and asked if anyone had information to get in touch with law enforcement.
Their children found them no longer alive. I cannot imagine the trauma. This case is still unsolved and it needs more attention and it needs closure. This is James and Kristen Brock. James, 45 years old, and Kristen, 41 years old, were a beloved couple in Carroll County, Georgia. They were active in their church and their friends and family just absolutely adored them. But on February 20th, 2025, their lives were cut short. And like I said, it was their children that found them. Early that morning, their children made a horrifying discovery. To my understanding, the 5-year-old first went into the room, noticed something was off, and she went and got her 16-year-old sister, who went into the room, tried to wake her parents up, and when she touched her mother's hand, she saw that it was cold. So she called 911 and they came out. And unfortunately, there was nothing that could be done. James and Kristen were gone. Allegedly, there were no signs of forced entry. Nothing was missing from the home. And the weapon that had been used could not be located. So it was determined that this was not a case where one of them took the other one's life and then took their own.
So Janice, you were fed all those facts by whom?
By Sarah Grace. There had been very little coverage so far, so I took what she told me at face value. Again, I viewed her as this poor child. I can't imagine being in that situation. And then a month later, I was shocked.
You know, I'm very curious. Did you ever see her many, many TikToks that she posted about her parents' murders?
I did, and I have to be honest. I think I can lean too heavily into compassion and empathy, but my husband immediately felt that something was off with this girl. I told him that he should have more empathy. How could he think that? But between her videos and the email that she sent me and the way that she said in her messages to me, this will be a big hit. He said, something smells funny. And I just said, no, you know, maybe we just don't remember what it's like to be a teenager and we don't know how a teenager would react to this. But looking back, I should have seen so many red flags.
Okay, wait a minute. She actually said to you, quote, this will be a big hit. What will be a big hit?
Yes. When she was asking me to make a video, she said, this will be a big hit. Hardly anyone has covered it. The one person that did is the number one search result on Google. So that, why in the world, if your parents' lives were taken, why would you be thinking about views, whether they're your own or someone else's? It should only be about awareness and answers. So that one I do regret not seeing as a red flag immediately, but yes, she said this will be a big hit.
So Katie Forrester joining us, Exclusives editor covering true crime. Katie, how many TikToks did this girl post?
Many. I think dozens over the time. There were a lot of, like you said, me posts, attention seeking. I mean, as somebody who's lost a parent, this is just not how you act when you lose a parent. You know, a lot of it.
You know what? That's an interesting point, Katie Forrester. And I would go to our new psychiatrist, Dr. William Maroney. But let me stick with the tried and true. Dr. Sue Kornbluth joining us, family relationship expert, owner of Dr. Sue and You, author of Building Self-Esteem in Children and Teens. Dr. Sue, thank you for being with us. Now, is that normal? And of course, normal doesn't really apply when both of your parents have been murdered under the roof with you down the hall asleep along with your little sister. Is that normal for a crime victim like Sarah Grace Patrick to start posting endless TikToks and saying things like, hey, post this and it'll be a big hit. It's number one on Google.
I mean, Nancy, come on, but between you and I, that sounds absolutely ridiculous. And it is. When you're grieving the loss of your parent, most times teens will grieve quietly inside themselves. They will sleep a lot. They will, have symptoms of stomach problems or headaches or things like that. They'll go into some kind of isolation because grieving as a teen is very difficult. They're not in normal situations going on TikTok or calling reporters to post a story that sensationalizes the death of their parents. It's absolutely not normal.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Now, I'm just thinking through the crime scene. They were found in their bedroom when police arrived. The mom and stepdad both cold to the touch. Dr. William Maroney, back in your wheelhouse. Let's keep it that way. Dr. Maroney, guys, renowned medical examiner and author of American Narcan. Dr. Maroney, what does that mean, that they were already ice cold to the touch?
At the time they were discovered, they were ambient temperature. That's, 72, 73, 74 degrees. Your body's 98.6. When your temperature in the room is 72, 73, 74 degrees, and the body temperature is 98, you're looking at about 19, 22, 23 degree drop. That takes about 3 hours. 3 hours between when they were shot and when they were discovered.
So about 3 hours. We know they were in their bedroom. We know there was, we believe there was the air conditioner going, but it was around 71 to 73 degrees. That's not cold. So how would that ambient temp in the room affect the temperature of the bodies, or would it?
A really good medical exam scene will have an ambient temperature and a skin temperature, and then they'll do a core temperature into the abdomen or liver. And that will also show you how fast the temperature is dropping with air conditioning. I still guess, if...
Okay, what did you just say? You said get a temp in the abdomen. Do you have to slice the body open to do that?
No, you stick a needle in. Stick a probe. And they'll see what temperature the liver is. And then you'll say the outside of the body's this and the inside of the body's this. And you'll still come up with, 3 or 3.5 hours. They were discovered at 5 o'clock in the morning and the police got there. They were probably shot between 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, just after midnight.
Dr. Maroney, I was pulling your leg earlier about you not being a psychiatrist. Dr. Maroney, you're okay. Brilliant. And I know that all of that is SOP, standard operating procedure for you. You just reel it off. But to the rest of us, the what you do and the way you do it and the way you explain it is amazing, because see, I was thinking as a layperson that the temp of the room, the ambient temperature in the room, would affect the temp of the body. Why do I care? Because I'm trying to figure out when they were killed, and I've got a reason for that. It's probative. It means something to me. And I just learned how you can put a needle, a probe, into the abdomen, get the internal organ temp. Then you compute with the body temp, the skin temp, you factor in the ambient temp, and you get how long they've been dead. And this is why I'm asking. To Ryan Brown, joining us, veteran criminal defense attorney at jryanbrownlaw.com. Ryan, what would you do if the perp had murdered her mother and stepfather and then just went back to her room and pulled the covers up and waited for her little sister to prance in there, mommy, daddy, wake up, and find their head blown off? So she laid there for how long? That's where Maroney comes in. 2 or 3 hours she laid there and just waited. It's like waiting to go in on Christmas morning and see what's in your stocking. She just laid there and waited for the little sister to find her mom and dad dead?
Yeah, the first thing I'm saying anytime is we have no idea whether she was the one that shot them or not. So starting any question with that, we don't know that to be true yet. And the second thing I'm doing as her lawyer is going through these victims' past and finding somebody we can blame for this, right? Who else had the motive? Who else had a dispute with these folks? Who else had beef with them in some way? And that's going to be my strategy the entire time, is reminding people as frequently as possible, we have no idea whether she's the one that pulled the trigger yet, and we're looking for other suspects that we can point the finger at as a some other dude did it defense as the case proceeds.
Okay, you know, Ryan Brown, that's something I like about you. You just put it out there. I'm looking for somebody else to blame, people. You just said it, and it's true. And every good defense attorney knows it. You won't say that in front of the jury. Hey, we're looking for anybody to blame here. But you're right. Nothing has been proven. This so-called evil high school girl is innocent. As we go to air tonight, she is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. I'm very, very curious to Janice, a well-known TikToker, under the name Allegedly Reportedly. I love that. Janice, when you interacted with Sarah Grace Patrick, what was her demeanor? I mean, I see all the crying, snotting, eyeliner photos she posted, but what were your interactions with her?
She just came off as desperate for people to cover this case. And what I find very interesting, I've heard a lot of victim blaming going on, but everything Sarah Grace told me about her parents is that they were wonderful. They were amazing people. So she came across as someone who lost two people that she treasured.
Carroll County Sheriff's Department are on the scene in minutes and begin looking over the scene that doesn't show any sign of forced entry, just a door that seems a bit ajar. Investigators spend all day at the home, combing the residence for evidence, speaking with neighbors, and searching for surveillance video.
The brutality of these murders is not in dispute. My family and I have seen the death certificates, and although we are not aware of exactly how many shots were fired, we do know that there were multiple gunshots to both Jamie and Kristen.
Our friends at Fox 5 Atlanta. Owie, Ryan Brown, no forced entry, nothing stolen, no sex attack, nothing. So someone just walks into the home. I mean, you're looking for somebody to blame. The sod defense, SOD, some other dude did it. What are you going to do with that? They didn't steal the car. They didn't steal the TV, the video recorder, the diamond rings, and then no cash, no guns, nothing's taken, nothing's missing. So the phantom creeps in, or maybe he flew in. Maybe it's a she. Secretly. You know what? Let's go with Ninja, dressed all in black, like Jodi Arias claimed. Ninja, dressed all in black, sneaks in on tippy toes. Doesn't take anything, doesn't rob anybody, doesn't even steal the car, doesn't make a sound, no forced entry, kills mom and dad, and leaves. That's your theory.
So the Saudi defense, you've got it. I find it to be very unsuccessful unless you can really pinpoint somebody. In a case like this, the defense has got to find somebody that was known to the victims. That would help explain the no forced entry as well, right? Who did they know that they would have welcomed into the home? Maybe not welcomed, but would have maybe let in the house or would have had access to the house or known their way around the house that had some sort of motive. I think just saying, hey, state, prove it wasn't anybody random is going to be unsuccessful, but they're going to have to really pinpoint someone with motive that could have entered the house without forced entry, would have had no motive to commit a sexual act of violence or a robbery or anything like that, and say, okay, state, now the burden's on you. We've given you these alternative suspects or two. Now you rule them out.
So, Ryan Brown, you're completely correct. And even under U.S. Supreme Court rulings and in this jurisdiction, Georgia Supreme Court rulings, the defense can't just say, oh, well, there were some other break-ins in the area, so that was them. No, you're right. You got to have a particular person to blame. Here's a great example. Brian Koberger was desperately looking for somebody else to blame. And now we find out he planned to blame one of the victim's friends. Yeah, and crucify that innocent person. Yeah, there has to be a person. You just can't go in and claim, hey, we think the burglar from down the street did it. He's never been apprehended, but I'm pretty sure it was him. You can't put that to a jury. You're right, Ryan Brown. You got to have a specific some other dude did it. But then, as you know, Ryan, the suspect's behavior before, during, and after the incident can come before the jury. I hope you're sitting down for this. Listen.
Sarah Grace Patrick spends a lot of time on TikTok creating content and asking for other influencers to keep the case alive and solve the murders of her mother and stepdad as weeks drag by with no arrest. She's engaging with true crime creators in an effort to get them to cover the story. The odd grab for attention is not lost on family members who now see many things Sarah Grace has done as red flags.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. So while she's busy TikToking Ryan Brown, how do you think a jury, if there ever is one, is going to respond to her spending all of her time in full hair and makeup TikToking, oh, of course, except for the ones where she gets in full hair and makeup and then starts crying and snotting. Remember, she had to put on all that hair and makeup before she could cry it all off. So, in the days following Mommy and Daddy's assassination in the home with her down the hall, she gets in full hair and makeup and then cries it off on TikTok. How do you think that'll set Ryan Brown?
Well, I think it's going to be very important with for the jury to know, hey, look, we're talking about victim blaming, how there's been a lot of that. She's a victim in our theory of this case. Blame her for how she's grieving. We're not going to blame her for how she's acting, how she's dressing, how she's crying, whether there's snot, tears, sniffles, whatever it may be. She's a victim, too. Her parents, step-parent were murdered. Don't judge, blame her for how she's reacting. Don't put the blame on this. She is a 16-year-old. Nobody on the jury is a 16-year-old. You don't know how a 16-year-old is going to grieve. Let's focus on the real issue here. Which
I can
is
remember. I remember being 16. And even at 16, the highlight of my day is when my mom would pull up the driveway and toot the horn coming home from work. Yeah, I remember that. And if there ever is a jury trial, they're going to remember that, too. And Janice, didn't you just tell us? Janice is allegedly, reportedly on TikTok, who was approached by Sarah Grace Patrick, no question about it, saying, hey, can I get a little PR about my mom and dad's brutal murder? It'll be a really big hit. It's number one on Google. Janice, isn't that true?
Absolutely. And then she began commenting things on the video I posted. Someone asked what weapon was used in this crime, and she replied with a gun emoji. Someone said that, from an investigative standpoint, it seems like this would have been someone that knew the family. And Sarah Grace replied and said, it sure would seem like it because they knew the house. Very haunting.
Oh, man. You know what? Every once in a while, Chris Byers joining me, PI, private investigator, owner of Byers Investigative Services, former police chief, Johns Creek, Georgia. Yes. Chris Byers, don't you love it when heaven just drops evidence in your lap? You don't even have to look for it. Come on. You just heard Janice, a.k.a., also known as allegedly, reportedly on TikTok, where basically Sarah Grace Patrick is giving the police all the information as if they couldn't find it themselves. They did, but had to be somebody that knew the house, had to be somebody that had been in there before, puts a little gun emoji when someone asked what was the murder weapon, which, by the way, was never found. Chris Byers, she might as well just give an all-out confession.
Yeah, absolutely. Very narcissistic and wants to be the center of attention. And she just laid out everything that the police needed. Of course, like you said, they would have found it anyway. That would be the first things that they're looking at. But yeah, thank you for helping us out, making our investigation even easier.
You know, another issue is then, in the midst of all of this, the eulogy begins to be analyzed online. The eulogy that Sarah Grace Patrick so gut-wrenchingly delivered about her parents. Listen.
Sarah Grace Patrick's eulogy is captured on cell phone camera, and many who watch it suggest the speech is a red flag. Jamie Brock's niece, Kristen Dowda, says she sat in the front row during the service, and even though Sarah Grace's voice sounded like she was crying, Kristen never saw a tear. Kristen Dowda finds the cell phone video online and shares it on her personal Facebook page.
Katie Forrester joining us, investigative reporter, assistant exclusives editor. What did you observe and what was noticed by others regarding her eulogy? I mean, that takes technical legal term. You may not be familiar with this, Katie Forrester. Balls the size of coconuts to get up on that stage and eulogize the parents that police believe she murdered in cold blood as they're asleep.
I mean, I think there are a lot of teenagers that wouldn't even be able to get up to speak regardless, even if they hadn't have murdered their own parents. I think it takes a lot of confidence to get up there. So to then get up there and make most of the speech about yourself, and then also at the end, the thing that police had mentioned was that at the end she said something like, I'm sorry, or she said sorry, and that was sort of out of place. And officials have said that that was another red flag. But just the way she spoke about them and the way she was talking about herself during it, I cannot imagine what it must have been like for people watching that who were already suspicious of her, because we know that the parents, their family and friends were already thinking that she may be responsible.
To Dr. William Maroney joining us, renowned medical examiner, toxicologist, opioid treatment expert and author. Dr. Maroney, I want to talk again. I want to come back to the wounds. With gunshot wounds, how would you determine if there were defensive wounds? What I'm getting at, doctor, is were they executed in their sleep, or did they wake up and try to protect themselves?
Because we have sheets and blankets, you would have arms covered. If gunshot residue is on hands, then they tried to protect themselves and there were defensive posturing. If somebody has a plain, simple, frank, uncomplicated char gunshot wound to the chest and there's no gunshot residue on hands, there was no defensive posturing.
Okay, I know at the risk of being called very slow, could you say that again? I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. How can you tell if there were defensive wounds?
If they test the hands of the victims and the hands of the victims have gunshot residue on them, but the hands were in the bed, then it's just like this truffle powder. There's powder that's gunshot powder, nitrates, sulfurs. On the victim's hands, the hands were up. If the hands are under sheets and blankets and there's no powder on the hands, then they were shot. Plain, simple, frank execution without any defensive posturing.
You know, this came up in the Brian Koberger case. Dr. Maroney, we were originally led to believe that all four of those beautiful young University of Idaho students were all murdered in their sleep. Then we find out after the plea deal that they fought for their lives. Many of them fought for their lives. And one, Kelly Gonsalves, was stabbed so many times in the face, she was disfigured. Another victim got up to 50 stab wounds. They were not killed in their sleep, as if that's somehow better. If this mom and dad had been murdered in their sleep, what would you have expected to find at the scene?
Very clearly, the gunshot on the skin would have had no barriers, no resistance, and you'll find a round, charred, like tattoo, shaped exactly like the muzzle and the barrel of the gun. It gets so hot, it burns, on the skin burns the shape of the gun on a contact wound. And it's not something you can brush off. It's burned. That would be a wound that has absolutely no defensive posturing. Something, plus when the round enters the body in a contact wound, gas from the barrel goes in and it spreads the skin. We call it a stellate lesion. Stellate means star-like. It's kind of a Latin term. And those stellate lesions prove that you press that gun onto the neck or the chest or the abdomen and you blew gas into the skin and it explodes as it goes in. Those are no defense, 100% execution style, charred stellate lesions.
So Dr. Maroney, gunshot residue, as you pointed out with your truffle powder, can dissipate with just being rubbed off very easily. But the tattooing from the hot gun and the searing of the skin, that cannot be brushed off.
No.
Okay, you physically are burned. What would you expect to find as to the regarding the position of the bodies if mom and dad have been shot in their sleep?
Well, another thing that I've seen on site is that if somebody is more animate or alive, they're moving around and sometimes the bullets buff the ribs or the bones or the spine. When somebody's pressed into the bed, the bullet will go through the person, through the bed, and into the floor. So having an animate body moving around oftentimes means you're not going to get a gunshot through the bed and into the carpet and into the floor. A body that's asleep is not passing any resistance back, and all the power goes through the bullet, through the body, through the bed, and into the floor. That's another big sign when people are shot while they're sleeping.
Dr. William Maroney, a technical and a subtle but important question. For instance, in the Jody Arias multiple stabbing murder of Travis Alexander, 29 to 31 stabs, we don't really know because the stabs were overlapping, and that's like stabbing Jell-O. You can't really tell how many times he was stabbed, then shot in the head. Unlike stabbings, when someone is shot multiple times, while on the outside of the body, you may not be able to tell how many gunshot wounds there were if they overlap. Inside the body, you can tell because the trajectory paths of the bullets will be different. Even though the outside of the body may be mangled, inside the body, when you look at the path of the bullet, you will see distinct paths and you can tell how many times each victim was shot. Is that true?
Yes. What we have in the autopsy suite is usually it's like an aluminum rod. Sometimes it's a plastic rod. Sometimes it's something that you might see in the garden shop at Walmart. And it's about this big. We begin with the end at the point of the barrel. And then you pass the rod through the body according to how many different shots you have to see what angle they all went at. And that's how you'll follow, because every single bullet has to be accounted. And in a hospital setting, a smart pathologist will send that body to radiology and they'll image all the bullets in the body. Or they'll have a mobile radiology come with a digital camera. And before you do the autopsy, if you never have the gun, if you never have the shell casings, you have the number of bullets to count from x-rays. And that's how you go through, and every path is determined with the rod. And at the end of your x-ray, you have to account because you don't know how many times the gun was fired if you're never going to get the gun. And you still have to say shot number one, shot number two, shot number three, and you follow the path of the bullet by the rods and how many different rods. And then you actually look at deformation. You know, a bullet that bounces off of ribs is going to be smashed up. A bullet that goes only through soft tissue is going to be less deformed. But you follow them all with rods, point of entry, and you begin with x-rays.
The point is, how many times did she allegedly, reportedly shoot her parents?
From the very moment the 911 call was received, a relentless investigation began. One that would span months, consume thousands of man hours, and require the full weight of the local and federal law enforcement agency partnerships. Today, we can confirm that an arrest has been made in the case. Kristen Brock's 17-year-old daughter, Sarah Grace Patrick, has been taken into custody and charged with two counts of murder and two counts of aggravated assault in connection with the deaths of her mother and her stepfather.
The defendant is charged with the brutal murders of my brother, Jamie, and my sister-in-law while they were lying in their bed. Shot multiple times, including both shot in the head.
From Fox 5 Atlanta, and of course the first thing the so-called evil high school girl does is try to get bond. Listen.
Personal safety. If the defendant can kill her own parents in such a violent manner, I fear for my own safety and the safety of my family and friends. The possibility that she could harm us is terrifying.
I am deeply concerned for the safety of my family. The gruesome and violent details of this case have shown me that the defendant has a disturbing lack of regard for human life. If someone is capable of what happened here, then I cannot ignore the real possibility that she could pose a threat to those of us left behind, especially if she were released on bond.
From our friends, Fox 5 Atlanta, Katie Forrester, yes, no, she was denied bond, right?
Yes, she was, and we all expected that. I mean, these charges are so strong, and police do not, you know, arrest somebody and put together so many charges for a 17-year-old if they don't have a lot of evidence. As I've said in the press conference.
And then, of course, Katie, immediately when bond was denied, she started the crying and the snotting, right? I believe we've got video of the crying and the snotting.
Been crying throughout, I think. There was kind of more crocodile tears when people were giving witness statements, when they were talking about her character statements. She was sort of, it looked to me like sort of fake crying throughout that. She was actually crying. So she started sobbing.
We're showing her right now, Katie. You're absolutely correct. The crying, the snotting, that's in her bond hearing. Ryan Brown, what do you do with that? That's from our friends at Fox 5 Atlanta. Are you going to let her continue with the crying and the snotting in front of the jury?
Yeah, so, you know, at the bond hearing, you're not too worried about it. No jury present. But, you know, I think it's good for somebody to be themselves in front of a jury, right? You run the risk of if you coach somebody up too much, tell them not to be emotional and control themselves in a certain way. You're more concerned about a client kind of being dismissive and kind of huffing and puffing in front of a jury, and kind of acting out. But, when you see tears, if I'm her lawyer, I don't care. She's sad or she's got people she loves that are murdered. Somebody else murdered her. She's a crime victim. She's being falsely prosecuted. Cry away. I've got no problem with it.
And very quickly, Chris Byers, private investigator, Byers Investigative Services, former police chief. Byers, we don't have the murder weapon. Were two weapons used, multiple gunshot wounds. So question, where's the murder weapon? Did somebody feed her the murder weapon? Is somebody helping her?
Yeah, one of the other things that's huge in that, it's a big thing for me and I have not seen in any of the reporting, is were there shell casings left? Do they have any shell casings that they can run through the National Integrated Ballistics database? to try to see what this gun, you know, the history of this gun, where this gun came from. But yes, the murder weapon being gone, what you want, that's one of the key things when you're an investigator and you show up to this scene and you want to know how they were murdered and where is the weapon that did it. So very possibly she has somebody else helping her. You heard the public information officer from Carroll County Sheriff's Department said in the end that more arrests could be coming. So that leads you to believe, you know, did she have help? Did she have help hiding this, planning this? Was there somebody else there? All these different things investigators are, sounds like they're still looking into.
As we wait for justice to unfold, we remember an American hero, Deputy Sheriff Jody Hull, St. Johns County Sheriff's, Florida, killed in the line of duty, leaving behind a grieving wife, Kelly, and seven children. American hero, Deputy Sheriff Jody Hull. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.